This is Wade Rathke with the Chief Organizer Report on Learning from Factory Man. All year I kept reading at this book with the long, drawn-out title, Factory Man, How One Furniture Maker Battled Offshoring, Stayed Local, and Helped Save an American Town, by Beth Macy was a must-read. From the descriptions, it sounded a bit like an anti-globalization, there's something out there that might save jobs and manufacturing peace. Obviously, my kind of book. There was a problem, though, because the book was all caught up in the fight between the publisher, Hachette, and the giant everything store that dominates the bookselling market, Amazon. I'm a hardcore Kindle user by necessity, because I can't carry the weight of so many books on my travels, and because I can't afford to buy the books in hard and soft cover unless there's no other choice. What a paradox, though, that I couldn't easily access a book about the impacts and strategies of dealing with globalization because a legacy business, elite publishing house with some claims to justice in the dispute, is going head-to-head with a company that is a modern master of the universe that's disrupted the old business models and wants to globally dominate publishing and a lot of other businesses. What should I do? Who knows, but I went with waiting it out and a pox on both of their houses until they settled the dispute and I could peacefully get the book on their bad but mutually agreeable terms on my Kindle. It's an idiosyncratic read, but on the whole worth the wait and the effort because the last several parts of the book make wading through the early parts a classic case of the ends justifying the means of the author's strategy. Here's the short take, though. A multi-generational family of North Carolina furniture makers managed to steer a lot of the furniture business from Michigan, the East Coast, to their neck of the woods by offering better access to timber and cheaper labor. Made a lot of money and built houses on the hill and the weird class and racial relationships of the area. And then is bitten hard by the same dog-eat-dog strategy as first Taiwanese manufacturers and then Chinese furniture factories undercut their labor and production cost. Oftentimes using lumber from the same forest and shipping back container loads of products for sale in the USA at dirt cheap prices. Many of the US furniture makers decide they can't beat them, so they join them and start outsourcing more and more of their work, shutting their factories, laying off their workers, and creating ghost towns of empty houses and rusting hulks of abandoned factories. In this tale, there's one maverick grandson, John Bassett III, who gets hopscotched out of his patrimonial claims to run the business, ends up with a shirt tail piece of the operation, and makes it a success with close attention and a tough love management style, and ends up rallying what's left of the industry to successfully file a claim under U.S. law against dumping, which means cutting the prices lower than the cost to make them, and using another piece of legislation, gets workers some retraining benefits as well. He ends up cutting his imports to zero, and by the end of the book, despite having shuttered many of his plants, is finally reopening one with fewer workers, but regardless, is on the upswing and is the last girl on the island, in his words, making wooden bedroom furniture. The author tells a story with JB3 as the hero, which is the way these things go, but it's hard to miss that the real winners were the lawyers on the dumping case from the fancy DC firms who probably grossed $50 million. One of the few good things ever to be attached to former Senator Robert Byrd, the legendary segregationist and longest-serving member of the Senate, was an amendment giving workers retraining money in dumping cases. But of course, that's now history because of U.S. agreements with the WTO, World Trade Organization. Watching the way various furniture manufacturers use their dumping relief money is also sobering, since so few of them upgraded their factories and so many of them simply rejiggered their retail operations or cashed in what they could. It's hard to miss the moral of the story of Factory Man, which seems to be that the oft-repeated tale that's really all about the money and the exception, an industrialist that likes his factory and cares about his workers, still proves that rule. There's no solution here and little hope, just a well-written book on what seems an outlier who didn't just take the money and run. This is Wade Rathke. For questions or comments, www.chieforganizer.org. You take it from here to there.